Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. United we stand, divided we fall. This may be one of the oldest and most popular motives in human history. It's cited in Aesop's fables, in the Harry Potter saga, in the New Testament, and of course, in multiple speeches of American presidents. If that's true on personal or national level, could that also apply to the world? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined from Beijing by Einar Tengen, senior fellow at the Taihe Institute. Mr. Tengen, it's great to see you. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let me start with the idea that I mentioned in my introduction, that a house, and that's the biblical version, a house that is divided against itself cannot stand. Would it be fair to say that the world as we know it today is perilously divided, or has it always been that way?
Well, there are moments of division. There's always division within societies, and sometimes it's healthy. You can have debate. But today, what we face is unparalleled. You see the unwinding of an international world order that the U.S. Put in place after World War II. It created the Cold War. There was this momentary euphoria during the term of Ronald Reagan, when it seemed like the U.S. had, quote, won. But then that was quickly, all the goodwill was quickly spent in terms of going into Afghanistan and fighting these needless wars, and then the invasion of Iraq. And now you see a United States which is looking to blame others for its misfortune. If you start looking at lower middle class, especially white Americans, they are bombarded on one side that they are, in charge, that they're the problem of society. On the other hand, they see that their incomes have not increased in the last 40 years. They've been going sideways. Meanwhile, people on Wall Street, are making more money. The two richest men in the United States, their wealth is greater than the bottom 50% of the entire nation. So when you start looking at these inequalities and what's happening within the U.S., it's divided. But that division has now spread to the world.
You mentioned the number of historical upheavals, starting with the Second World War and perhaps even before that. And, the world has seen many challenges over the last century. And yet I heard you recently say that this could be one of the worst patches for humanity to go through in over 100 years. That's a pretty dramatic assessment. What made you reach it?
Well, it goes to what I was leading to, is that you have political uncertainty, you have economic uncertainty, because along with the U.S. kind of changing the global rules or retreating from them, whether it's WTO, ICC, et cetera, you have an economic transformation that is happening. We're literally going through a paradigm shift, and it's not going very well. China is rising economically. The U.S. sees it as a threat as opposed to an opportunity. And, this digital revolution is really going to have as much impact as the Industrial Revolution. I mean, if you start thinking about the number of people who are going to be displaced, it'll be truck drivers, taxi drivers, even crews of ships as things become more autonomous. Why? Because it's more efficient. That's why these things will happen. People keep thinking that if there's some, overall reason. No. Economically, money has its own logic, and it follows through. You see that today with the amount of money that's pouring into China because they have a stable government. You see that in Russia. When Russia simply said, okay, you want oil, pay ruble. All right, ruble went back up. In fact, it's now so strong that the government is saying, oh, wait a second, we can make it a little bit weaker. So, there are unintended consequences going on. All the logic, all the ideas that were in the past are no longer valid. There's just a lot of change, and embracing that change is being very, very difficult for powers like the United States.
Can I ask you something on the issue of Russia, just to narrow it a little bit, because you're already painting a very broad and pretty complex picture for our audience. But if we look at many of the Western media, you would get an idea that the current confrontation between Russia and the West over Ukraine is one of the major reasons, if not the major reason, for things falling apart. I think you partially answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway to give you an opportunity to perhaps to elaborate on that. Is it indeed the fact that the Russian action in Ukraine set this chaos in motion, or were those events in Ukraine in themselves a consequence of something that was?
We're intelligent people. We don't need to beat about the bush. If you look at any seasoned statesman since the fall of the wall. They all said that any action in Ukraine would bring war with Russia. And this is Kissinger, this is Keenan, these are the elder statesmen. There was never any question. No one said, that's not true or anything like that. So NATO's expansion into these areas was calculated to create a reaction, and eventually it came. That does not excuse, I'm not in favor of wars.
Neither am I, by the way, and I don't think there are many people
who are. The issue is, if I back you into a corner and you start coming out swinging and other people get hurt, I can't say, you did the wrong thing. I mean, the U.S. is culpable in pushing Russia into this situation. But that does not excuse exactly, all these deaths. And unfortunately, the U.S. has now, after Iraq and Afghanistan, switched to a strategy where they use proxies. They want to use other countries to fight their wars, to weaken their enemy. China's concerned about this in terms of Taiwan. Obviously, Ukraine was this, the soft inner lining of what would irritate and bring Russia to action. So this is really dangerous when countries, routinely use other countries as proxies, pawns in this kind of war. Escalation is probable, not possible, probable. And you start to see that already.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Changin, in another interview, you also called the situation in Ukraine a war that was deliberately created for PR purposes. And that caught my attention because it's hard to imagine what kind of PR result would justify not only the amount of suffering and loss that the Ukrainians and the Russians are going through, but also the ripple effect throughout the world that this crisis is having on countries that have absolutely nothing to do with either Russia, Ukraine, or the United States for that reason.
Well, I mean, I'm not in favor of American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism is the idea that the U.S. can do whatever is necessary to bring the world into a state of uniformity. That means democracy that America likes, and free markets, liberal values. But the hypocrisy of it is that the U.S. is trying to push the world, as it says, it's pushing the world in this direction. But it's using, everything that they accuse everyone else of doing. I mean, starting wars, that's not liberal, thinking. Forcing countries to change the regime, that has nothing to do with democracy. Open markets are great, except America itself is now dominated by, in all its major industries, by two or three players who are pursuing their own economic agenda at the expense of their people. So, I mean, the U.S. is in this odd situation where it's failing at home, but rather than confront that, what they're doing is they're blaming others abroad. So when you start talking about Ukraine, you have a situation where the U.S. wants to minimize any country that it does not think is part of the international order in the way it wants. I mean, they've already said, how many times? Regime change. Yeah, we want to get rid of Putin. Insane. Russia is a country that has more nuclear weapons than anybody else. But what happens if you destabilize it? It seems complete madness. Yet, it's out there. And why? The U.S. is trying to prove that it's right and everyone else is wrong, despite the fact that we can't lead by example.
Now, you mentioned the so-called international order, and one of the things I start hearing here in Russia is that Russia's actions in Ukraine, as hard to explain and hard to justify as they are, may have been based not on some historical grievances or not even on the threat perception, but rather on the cold-blooded objective calculation of where the world is moving, how the balance of power in the world is shifting, and the conclusion that even if the worst-case scenario materializes and all ties with the West are cut, that Russia can survive and accomplish its development goals by associating itself more closely with non-West, and by doing that, you know, sort of strengthening this multipolar world that it wants to see. What do you think about that? Do you think that's a utopian idea, or do you think that has some kernel of truth to it?
Okay, so let's separate a couple of issues. President Putin laid out very clearly in his Munich security speech how he felt. Russia had said, I mean, he spoke in German in Berlin at the end of the fall of the wall and dissolution of the Soviet, and said, we're looking forward to our European home. And that I clearly identified Russians as seeing themselves as more European than Eurasian. And then, 7 years later, he gets up and he says, you have lied to us, you have humiliated us. You continue to expand into areas you said you would not, and you will not allow us to have a home. So we are therefore have no choice but to try to destroy, to go against the international order that you've created that is, in essence, a foot on the throat of Russia. So clearly he expressed his opinion. So no one can be surprised that, Russia says, we do not like this international-led order by the U.S. that the EU goes along with, because it is not fair to other countries. There is a multipolar world, and that can be clearly illustrated by what's been happening. India, gone its own way. Mexico, gone its own way. All right? Indonesia. I mean, quite clearly, things have shifted in that direction. Now, how the shape of the world economy arises, how does it arise from this? Unfortunately, it could be from the ashes, because right now we're talking about food shortages and power shortages, and these are going to affect innocent bystander countries. I'm talking about the Middle East, Africa. These are countries, and even parts of Southeast Asia, these are countries that do not have the wherewithal to compete for food at the prices that they're going to be. They do not have the wherewithal to compete for power at the prices. Without food, you cannot live. Without energy, you cannot run your economy. And without running your economy, you cannot pay your international debt. So this is why I have a very grim outlook on the situation. What the U.S. And all the world powers should be doing at this point is recognizing that this is a critical time in history. This is about the survival of the human race.
Well, Mr. Changin, we are also at a very critical point in our conversation because we need to take a break now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Машина с гуманитаркой. А у нас ни воды, ни хлеба, вообще ничего.
Здесь продуктовые наборы, здесь есть все.
Обстреливают еще нацики, понимаешь?
Азовцы, если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нацики отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончим сладкая розанка.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Einar Tangen, senior fellow at the Tyher Institute. Mr. Tangen, before the break, we were talking about the ripple effect that the Ukrainian crisis is causing around the world. And obviously, Russia is bearing a lot of pain, the most pain from it, because of the Western attempts to cut it off completely from the rest of the global economy. And as challenging as it is, both for the Russian government and for the Russian people, I'm hearing a paradoxical idea here in Moscow that, you know, this amount of economic and geopolitical suffering right now may actually inoculate Russia against greater pains a few years down the line, when the Western-led, Western-centered system will disintegrate even further. Now, obviously, Russia has no choice at this point of time, but do you think other countries may also think about it, about perhaps lowering their dependence on the West, or, you know, trying to establish their own self-sufficiency and survival ability in the case similar sanctions are applied to them or affect them for no reason of their own making?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the major issues that people haven't really talked about is that if Russia is able to survive this, this will be another example of how the world is truly multipolar. And it's not that the U.S. can dictate, terms to everybody, and if you don't go along, you'll be crushed. I mean, let's look at the history of sanctions. How many years in Iran? You have Venezuela, you have Cuba, the longstanding one. It hasn't changed the regimes. And right now, how Russia deals with this is going to be a very, very important bellwether in the movement towards not only a multipolar world, but one in which economic activity, markets, and production are increasingly moving east, as is Russia, by, not by choice, but by necessity. Mm-hmm. So in terms of how all of this emerges, how Russia is able to do that, a lot of it depends. One of the things that is most noticeable is, as we talked about with the ruble, if the U.S. was thinking that we could crush your economy simply by, saying the ruble, you can't convert it into dollars, and therefore you're dead. Instead, Russia said, pay for our oil in rubles. Ruble is doing very well. It's actually above where it was. So, I mean, at this juncture, there's a certain independence. So, when you start looking at this, you're seeing the disintegration, not the disintegration, you're seeing the lessening of American influence. And that is going to be traumatic. No one should celebrate that. I mean, the U.S., 5% of the people consuming 20% of the world's GDP, that demand goes away, there will be additional hardships. So right now, yes, Russia is very well placed because it has energy and it has food. It may not have all the extra luxuries. There might be problems getting parts for things, but eventually those supply lines will be filled through India, through Indonesia, through Brazil, through China, through a host of countries. Right now, the international press tries to make it seem that China is the only one who is remaining non-aligned in this situation. But the fact is, it's the majority of the world, not only in landmass, but also population, that is actually saying we're not interested in a war that was precipitated by the U.S., but that is resulting in the tragedies in Ukraine.
Now, Mr. Tangen, the makeup of this new world order to a significant extent will depend on what kind of a relationship the countries will pursue. And I think the example of Russia and China over the last couple of decades is quite instructive here, because both capitals like to cite their relationship as a model for other countries. They see their ties, the way they're structured, as a container within which immediate challenges, hardships, competing interests could be held. And I've heard both the Russians and the Chinese suggest that could be a good model to pursue. Do you agree with that? Do you think it could be extrapolated to other countries? And do you ultimately think that geopolitics has reached the point where various countries can put their strategic and shared concerns above immediate one-sided gains?
I think there's, it depends on the country and their situation. I mean, I do a lot of work on Indian TV, and I was skeptical, very well-educated Indian spokesperson who had been in the foreign ministry, was talking about high ideals, about the democracy, about liberalism, the rule of law, all of these things. And then at the next moment, the second part of his answer was all about what's in it for India. So, I mean, you either have these ideals and you try to follow them, or you just say every man out for himself. And this is really the danger of this new emerging international order, is that with a multipolar world, people will start fractioning. They just say, well, you know, it's every country for themselves. And I do think that nations like Russia, China, eventually the U.S. and Europe, as major players, as leaders, have to lead by example. And that means less wars, less selling of arms and things like that. And I don't mean just the U.S., I mean across the board. I don't know how a gun has made life better for anybody. You look in the United States right now, everyone says the problem is we don't have enough guns. I would say the problem is we have too many.
You mentioned a couple of individuals who have benefited from it. Maybe it's all about them at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now, I mean, Europe is awakening itself to the idea that the U.S. Is positioning itself to be the, you know, the breadbasket of Europe and also the energy supplier. And that is not something that everybody in Europe is quite comfortable with, because they're very aware that the U.S. has in the past enforced whatever it thought was necessary for the good of the United States on other countries. And I'm talking about the tariffs. You know, we are only one election away from going right back to where Donald Trump was. All right. And then you could, after him, you could have another flip flop. How can you run a world? How can you run a country when you're constantly flip flopping back between antithetical ideas and, movements? I mean, it's just not possible. And this will be the undoing of the United States. It's the inability to plan, the inability to provide a predictable future. Business depends on it. You know, people have to know that they can plan. If they can't do that, there's no going forward. Inflation is a massive issue. 77% of the people in the United States feel that, I think, Biden is going to lose the House and probably the Senate. When that happens, you have an unworkable government. It's not good.
Now, and as you just mentioned, inflation is a problem not only for the United States, but pretty much for the rest of the world. And I think this is also what makes our seemingly abstract discussion much less abstract, because these lofty concepts like world order has a direct impact on the price of a loaf of bread in a local supermarket. And many people around the world are seeing it right now. But that wasn't the case even a decade ago. The United States was able to conduct many wars without its population ever feeling affected. What do you think has changed in the world to bring that home, to make the Americans feel the pinch of the actions that their government is initiating on their behalf?
Well, we did feel the pain. I mean, Afghanistan was a morass. So Iraq was a failure. In the Middle East, we've been fighting phantom wars where there's no strategy to win and no ability to lose. We're already
Let's admit, an average Joe never knew about it. I mean, he may have gotten some news his life wasn't affected.
They didn't know about it because it was being financed with debt. And that was $4 trillion between the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And you don't notice it because you don't pay that debt. The government does. But right now, the U.S. is in a situation where it's overloaded with debt, especially because of these wars and then COVID that followed it. And they're not in a position where they can even save themselves. I mean, there's going to have to be a drastic change in monetary policy in order to do this. You have the Fed, which is pushing the country into a recession, if not depression, simply because it needs to build up, in their mind, ammunition to reinflate the economy after the worst has passed. But the fact is, raising rates at the Fed level is great on a tertiary economy. It affects jobs, it affects the amount of investment, et cetera. but it does not make one loaf of bread, and it does not create one barrel of oil. And those are chronic shortages caused by the current situation, logistics, and also situation in Ukraine. And they don't seem to understand that. And this is what is really bothersome. When you have really smart people who are doing really dumb things. And it's just, it's inconceivable.
Well, I think the question is still open how smart they are. And I think that brings us to this long discussion about what constitutes good governance, because from the Chinese perspective, what is an effective governance is creating some basic conditions for, you know, good productive human life and development, rather than feeding people some ideological ideas of why freedom is more beneficial than the so-called autocracy. The Americans are still framing their politics in this way of freedom versus or liberty versus autocracy. Do you think that's an effective narrative in this day and age? Do you think other countries buy it?
Well, it's not being bought in the United States. I mean, you have people on opposite sides of the fence who are literally willing to, engage in a civil war. That's what we had with the storming of the Capitol. We had a small group of people who literally wanted to tear down the society they were in. Many of these people were in the armed forces. They were in the police. They were malcontents, but they were part of the system that is supposed to protect America. So you have, this idea that, you know, everything is solved by a ballot box, a free market, and free speech is nonsense. It doesn't work. And, you know, right now in China, if you ask people if that's what they want, they will tell you absolutely not. They look in horror at the gun violence in the United States, the division, people rioting against, health concerns. I want to give you a vaccine. Oh no, I'm free. I should be able to spread my disease to everybody. That's my right. Where are the responsibilities? Mm-hmm. And in China, you know, they go on the other side. Societal responsibilities are put ahead of the individual desires. And it's not about rights. There are rights and responsibilities to the individual and the grouping. And in the U.S., it has become magnified and grown out of proportion. How can I possibly have rights if I have no responsibility? And you have politicians who are out there fanning the flames of these kind of nonsense, and all it is leading to more division. They want power, but they have no idea what they're going to do with it except try to create more division and nastiness.
Well, Mr. Tengen, apparently it didn't get any more optimistic in the second part of our discussion, but we have to leave it here. Thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.